Anne from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumry. School is out for summer in Juneau. For retiring teachers, principals, and other school staff, the end of this year is especially bittersweet. KTOO's Katie Anastas talked to three of them about their time in the Juneau School District.
Gretchen Kriegmont has been at Thunder Mountain High School long enough to work with former students' kids.
I had a kid come in the door, and I'm like, oh my gosh, who is your dad? I 100% am sure I taught your father. So just kind of seeing whole families grow up all the way from, you know, kindergarten all the way through is pretty amazing.
Over the last two decades, Kriegmont and other retirees have watched the district expand to new campuses, weather the pandemic, and incorporate Alaska Native language and curriculum. Kriegmont started out in the district as a history teacher and then became a school counselor. She wanted to help students grow academically, emotionally, and socially. She says that balance was especially important during the pandemic.
While it was really challenging, we persevered. And I think that's what education is about and what high schoolers are about, is you see the resilience that high schoolers offer and the magic that they bring to society.
Fellow retiree Henry Hopkins saw that magic too. His outdoor biology class at Yadot Katle Juneau Douglas High School has been at the forefront of Juneau's efforts to incorporate Alaska Native knowledge and language into its schools.
In my outdoor biology class, we talk a lot about names of the landscape, because a lot of names are very informative in Tlingit.
His students wondered why Juneau Douglas High School didn't have a Tlingit name like some of the other schools in the district. The students met with the Douglas Indian Association, and Fran Houston gifted the name the school has today, Yadot Katle, which means beautifully adorned face. Hopkins' class also highlighted Tlingit science and subsistence. He invited Indigenous elders to the classroom, who taught the students about things like halibut hooks. He says it helped strengthen his relationships with his Alaska Native students.
I think historically our school system has done very poorly with Native students and the Native community. I've been trying to bridge that gap from the first day I taught, I think.
Lucy Potter sees new gaps forming. As the principal at Sit-Atish Anach Glacier Valley Elementary School for the last 9 years, she's seen some of the district's youngest students go through the pandemic. She called the last week of school an emotional roller coaster.
You feel some sadness and some relief and some joy, and it's really a mixed bag of emotions.
Teachers are still trying to help kids catch up academically. They're also seeing more behavioral and emotional challenges among students. Potter teared up when she talked about the changes and how tired they've left teachers.
What I'm seeing as a result of that, and just all of them pouring their hearts out and teaching, not only teaching, but doing a lot of social-emotional learning with them and helping them through these really difficult residual effects from COVID, I think that they're tired. They're really tired.
Potter is too, and she's worried that the Alaska Reads Act, which goes into effect in fall, will add even more work onto teachers' plates. The act requires schools to consider holding students back if they're not reading at grade level. Potter thinks that could do more harm than good.
Many of our families are just making it by. They're working two and three jobs to provide for their family. And, you know, some of them aren't as involved in their children's education, and I worry that the Reads Act is creating even more of a divide.
Potter's office was filled with colorful decorations during the last week of school. Staff filled her office with balloons, and students wrote cards. "I want you to be happy when you quit your job," one student wrote. "Also, you are the best principal ever." In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Gathering environmental data is critical for scientists as they work to understand our rapidly changing climate. But to a non-scientist, that data might seem confusing or just plain boring. That's why a team of researchers have introduced a new environmental sensor that translates weather data from across Southeast Alaska into music. As KTOO's Anna Canny reports, it will be used to help students and community members in Sitka and Huna hear and hopefully better understand their changing environment.
This is the sound of a sunny afternoon. The heat of the day crescendos, and as the sun sets, the air becomes damp. This melody was composed using measurements of temperature and humidity. That kind of data is crucial for scientists who are studying our rapidly changing environment, but usually they don't put it in a song.
They show you wiggles on a graph, but they don't usually go too deep into having the person translate that into meaning.
What could weather data mean for a non-scientist? That's the question Chet Udell set out to answer.
How do you get those people to empathize with environmental data?
Udell designs environmental sensors with his lab at the University of Oregon. He's also a composer. The Weather Chimes sensor is a new instrument that combines those interests. It's an environmental sensor that translates weather data into music. Many people already do that in their backyards. That's where Udell found his inspiration.
The wind chime is a really interesting translation of unseen environmental phenomenon. It's giving me information that, you know, could be useful if I'm curious about how windy it is outside anyways. And it also is aesthetically pleasing.
Weather Chimes builds on that basic concept. The device is essentially a small plastic box that houses sensors to gather data on things like light, temperature, humidity, and soil moisture. You stick it outside, and it takes measurements all day. Then it uses Wi-Fi to send that data to a computer program where a person can assign weather phenomena to different keys, scales, and instruments, like a marimba.
So that's the humidity.
By listening to those musical translations, you can start to hear weather patterns. Around sunrise, there's a symphony of the world warming up and drying out. And throughout the day, there are melodies and counter-melodies.
There's this thing in composition, Beethoven uses a lot, Bach uses a lot, called a contrary motion, or like when one voice goes in one direction, another voice goes in a different direction. And there's a lot of environmental things that have contrary relationships.
Temperature and humidity, for example.
The temperature peaks up after the light kind of comes on, and the humidity drops a good bit after the light, after the sun comes up.
So patterns that occur naturally are some of the same patterns that composers like to use when making music.
By putting certain things together that are related that way, you can actually take advantage of traditional mechanisms that people have invented to make music sound good.
And through making music, Weather Chimes could also help people to think more deeply and personally about the weather. When there's a particularly rainy period, is that good news or bad news? The hope is that students can ponder questions like that through music.
Should I make a happy melody or a sad melody? Should I make something that goes fast or slow? Like, what does this mean to me?
Educators at the Sitka Sound Science Center and Sitka High School will use the Weather Chimes in classrooms and educational workshops over the coming year. And Udell and his lab will work with local partners to install Weather Chimes for community design projects, including Yellow Cedar Monitoring in Sitka and Salmon Stream Monitoring in Hoonah. Reporting from Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
The 750-mile race to Alaska starts on Monday, and KRBD's Reagan Miller has more.
The idea is simple, but the race is not. No motors, no engines, and 750 miles from Port Townsend to Ketchikan, tagging Victoria, British Columbia along the way.
Currently, the weather forecast is looking relatively tame for the start of the race, but that can change in a heartbeat.
That's Jesse Weigel. He's the race boss. Weigel says about 3 of the 39 registered vessels have arrived at the start line, and the rest are expected over the weekend. The idea is described like this on the race's website, quote, "It's like the Iditarod on a boat with a chance of drowning being run down by a freighter or eaten by a grizzly bear." As far as what they'll face on the water, Weigel isn't sure. He says it's part of the draw.
Funny thing about Race to Alaska is we planted right here in June just because it's hard to tell what the weather's going to do. It could be a shake-and-bake kind of slow sit in the sun and pedal your way to Alaska, or we could have gales and wind advisories and all sorts of things.
There aren't any teams hailing from Ketchikan this year, but there are teams from across the country, Australia, the United Kingdom, and Canada. First place prize is $10,000, but Weigel says the runner-up prize is the real star of the show.
The $10,000 for first place, that's chump change. Really, what you're after is a stake nut.
The race is separated in courses. The proving ground is from Port Townsend to Victoria, roughly 40 miles. The second leg is nicknamed the Bitter End and takes a team all the way to Ketchikan, the other 710 miles. Some teams will do just the first leg, others will go all the way, some won't finish. it's a lot easier for the fans. Once the race has started, teams can be tracked online. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And this is KTOO.